Osiris.
Coming at you May 3rd, 2024. It's the inaugural record release from Discograffiti. Metal Machine Muzak is a slanted tribute to Lou Reed's divisive 1975 double LP Metal Machine Music. Lester Bangs called it the greatest album ever made, but no matter how it hits you, it's always been the ultimate music freak secret handshake. My ambient reimagining features four 16-minute, one-second tracks, just like the original, and each one was created by a top-shelf indie rock visionary. Lou Barlow from Dinosaur Jr. and Sebado, Corey Hansen from Wand, W. Cullen Hart from the Olivia Tremor Control, and Mark Robinson from Unrest. That's right, not a slouch in the bunch, unlike 99% of the compilations you've ever begrudgingly purchased for the one and only band on it you just had to hear. Metal Machine Muzak won't be available on streaming. The digital drops on May 3rd. The vinyl will be shipped this summer, and we're taking pre-orders for both right now. The LPs are going fast. They're being produced in a very limited edition run of 300 numbered 180-gram color vinyl double LP gatefold copies, only 100 of which can be ordered online. These copies will be numbered from 1 to 100, and they're first come, first served. To order, just go to patreon.com/discograffiti, then head into our shop. Again, that's patreon.com/discograffiti. Don't miss out on Metal Machine Muzak, the ambient experience designed to make Brian Eno run screaming. Welcome to Discograffiti, the music obsessives podcast that gives freaks like you and me the chance to connect with a brotherhood obsessed with rating the entire discography of every single artist and band that ever mattered. I'm your host, Dave Gebro, and with 3 to 4 episodes each week, you're going to gain a comprehensive knowledge of an act's history and output in the time it takes to listen to one album. Each new guest swings a hard left into an area you either had no idea you needed to know about or know all about and can't believe you're not alone out there. I am thrilled to announce that we have partnered with the podcast network Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. You can check out all their music podcasts at osirispod.com. It's Metal Machine Music Week here on Discograffiti. Ergo, in this bite-sized mini-episode, we'll be turning our spray cans on Lou Reed's deafeningly assaultive 1975 double album. Along with our special guest, Lou Barlow of Sebado, Dinosaur Jr., and the Folk Implosion, one of the exalted contributors to Discograffiti's Metal Machine Muzak double tribute LP. Make sure you don't miss out on the other three bite-sized Metal Machine music pieces this week. The full roster is as follows: Lou Barlow on Friday, April 26th, Corey Hansen from Wand on Monday, April 29th, Unrest's Mark Robinson on Wednesday, May 1st, and the Olivia Tremor Control's W. Cullen Hart on Thursday, May 2nd. And then next week, we'll be celebrating the May 3rd release of Metal Machine Muzak with 4 separate episodes in which Robinson, Hart, Hansen, and Barlow detail the approaches they took to each of their 16-minute pieces. To order Metal Machine Muzak, just head over to patreon.com/discograffiti/shop, or just click either of the links right there in the show notes. But whatever you do, make sure you order it, because it'll blow your effing mind, and it's for a good cause, because it'll help keep this show afloat. Just try to imagine a world without Discograffiti. Yeah, I know, it stinks. And while you're up there ordering on Discograffiti's Patreon, feel free to subscribe as well for the complete versions of all our shows, plus a massive barrage of over 150 extra episodes. Even if you're on the fence, you might as well, because it's completely free to become a basic member. And away we go then with Lou Barlow. So, aside from the first name, what is the connection with Lou Reed's career? Is it a deep connection just in general? How intensely do you connect with his work, especially solo stuff, not as much Velvet's?
I heard something recently that I thought was good.
like Street Hassle or something. I'm like, I got to go back and listen to Street Hassle. I'm not hugely crazy about his solo work, although like Walk on the Wild Side haunted my childhood. I loved it. It's truly one of the most extraordinary things to hear out of a radio when you're 7, 8. Like hearing that coming out of a radio, I mean, stuff that just truly made such a ghostly impression on me at a very early age, like Walk on the Wild Side, it changes the atmosphere. But I found his solo work like patchy, like kind of like Iggy Pop. I'm not a, like a, I mean, hey, they did something great. I'm going to love everything they've done till they die. I'm not really like that. But Metal Machine Music is one of the only ones that I bought. I think I bought Transformer. Is that one? I bought that one with Walk on the Wild Side, and I tried Berlin. I didn't really like it.
That's my all-time favorite of his.
Yeah, that one just never, I mean, just texturally. I'm all about, it's all textural stuff. I didn't like the style. Metal Machine Music, though, you know, I definitely got that, and I definitely dug it, you know, for sure.
When did you first connect with it? When did you get it? And I know you were kind of over it because you'd heard even more brutal stuff.
Well, I didn't consider it brutal, I guess, by the time I heard it. Would be the, I mean, I found a copy in the late 80s, kind of intrigued by it, you know, intrigued by, I mean, it's a great package. I thought it was far less abrasive than what I had been led to understand. I would say that. It seemed much more like soothing. It didn't seem crazy, really.
Have you ever listened to the entire double album all the way through without cheating?
Yeah, I did. Yep. When I got it, yeah, sure. I mean, it was the 80s. I had nothing else to do. I was high. It's like, yeah, you know, if I wasn't working, I was at home listening to records, you know, so yeah.
Would you use it for Assault of Purposes? You know,
for Assault of Purposes, I had Swans. My mother told me that the Cocteau Twins made her want to kill herself. So,
wow.
I don't think, I mean, yeah, Metal Machine Music. I don't think that would have, you know, I was discovering that at the same time as Metallica. I mean, it was all happening, you know, in that kind of mid 80s. Jesus and Mary Chain. I actually heard that. I think I heard that before I heard Metal Machine Music.
So to you, it did feel like ambience then? Metal Machine Music?
I didn't know that word back then. Ambient meant, that word meant nothing to me. I have no idea. And even now I'm just like, ambient? I mean, what is, I mean, ambient to me means like inoffensive, and it means in the background. And no music is in the background for me. Every time I hear music, it comes right to the forefront, no matter what it is. That's what I'm focused on. So ambient is not a word that I would use for anything or even that I understand.
What would be the music then that would most intensely rip away the bark and reveal parts of yourself that would not be healthy to look at all the time? What music would you use to go there?
I made that music for us. I made that music for you, dude. I made it. It's yours now. I handed it to you. That's exactly it.
Yeah, that's
exactly. I was like, and I had that thought too when I was making it. It's like, I want to make something that like I never, like if someone plays, if I can listen to it myself, it's my private place, you know, that's where I'm safe. But if I had to listen to that in front of anybody, it's like, I want to make something that I could not comfortably listen to with anyone else in the room. And that was another sort of guiding principle behind the piece that I made.
Now, your daughter, what would be the song that you'd be most terrified for her to hear lyrically?
For me, like of my catalog?
Your catalog, far as revealing, because you have so many revealing songs. You know, the piece for Metal Machine Music is one of a slew of things. I mean, right off the top of my head, let me think. There's High School. There's Albuquerque 89, which is a particularly big favorite of mine.
I don't really want my kids to hear that. I don't really want to do that. Maybe not so much the masturbation tunes. Yeah, maybe. Maybe not so much. You know.
You have so many of them.
I do.
You do.
For good reason.
It's healthy. And plus, it's unhealthy to not do it.
Well, I was also raised Catholic, so I was handed a lot of like shit that a lot of guilt and things that I probably really didn't have to deal with. But, you know, yeah, I was pretty hardcore. I was raised pretty Roman Catholic until I was a teenager. So
are you religious now or no?
I mean, my own way, of course. Yeah, but not.
Well, you don't go to church, though.
No, but I would. I mean, I would. I mean, I did in L.A. Actually, I went to a church, an Episcopalian church in Hollywood that was pretty cool. It was really cool. It mostly was for like gay men, and it actually had a really big purpose during the AIDS epidemic and St. Thomas the Apostle Church in Hollywood. It was beautiful. It was mostly, and they did Latin masses and I enjoy that. But that was amazing too, because I'm going to go off on a whole other fucking thing now you're asking me, but but there was a lot of actors that went to that church. So when they did the readings, the Bible readings, the people that did the readings would like fucking do the readings. And the choir was like, wow, like banging. It was fucking cool. And because there were so many familiar things, Episcopalian is related to Roman Catholic in a way, but it's a much more accepting version of it.
Yeah, I was raised Jewish and I never had any kind of transformative experience in a temple. But a good friend of mine who played one of the Temptations in the Temptations movie, his name's Ben Kane. He took me to his church, which was a Baptist revival thing. And Marilyn McCoo from the Fifth Dimension was up there on the pulpit. People were crying and dancing, and I felt something there. I mean, I wouldn't have converted, but that pulled me in for sure.
Yeah, I can't. Yes, religion was a big part of my life early on, but cool services at St. Thomas the Apostle.
So let's get back to Metal Machine Music. Is it a highfalutin electronic composition or an amphetamine-fueled fuck you to his record company?
I think it's obviously between the two of those. I think he really enjoyed it. Like, whatever he was doing, he obviously enjoyed it. And if you're on amphetamines, and I went through my period with that, not amphetamines, but fucking speed. But yeah, I don't know. It probably really helped him. I think it was probably a very therapeutic process going through that for him. So it's hard for me to think that the whole time he was like, ugh. I think he was actually, like I said, when I first heard it, I found it very melodic and soothing. So I believe the liner notes. I actually believe that, like, yeah, he was like, it might have been drug fueled, but hey, that doesn't make it any less legitimate.
Oh, definitely not. And have you heard Sally Can't Dance? You know, the adjacent record in his career?
No.
It's interesting because Metal Machine Music is, you know, kind of amelodic unless you kind of, you know, form those blobs into shapes. But Sally Can't Dance is a very song-oriented record that he did. I believe it was directly after Metal Machine Music.
Okay.
But it's so ersatz. I mean, every last second of it feels like it's more of a fuck you somehow than Metal Machine Music.
You know, to be perfectly honest, like a lot of his stuff his really melodic stuff, I find it obnoxious. When he really he's like, fuck, that's the fuck you stuff. When he goes really cloying and like, he really surfs that line. And he did that also in the later period Velvet stuff. It's like he just, where you can feel almost the sarcasm really coming through it. And it's, yeah, I don't know, Metal Machine Music is a nice lull in his career. Like it, because it's just like, you know, at some point I'll bring myself to listen to what he did with Metallica and stuff like that.
That's a real one-off. I mean, it's incredible in its own way.
Yeah, I'd love to have the time to listen to it.
Well, I honestly don't even know how to adequately thank you. Beyond the fact that I've had this dream to put this compilation together for quite a long time, the depth of your work, I never could have imagined that something like this would wind up being part of it. And I'm incredibly honored, really. You know, you should be incredibly proud of it. And I know people are going to connect with it. There's no question. And just to let you know, the reason why my texts became more insistent and consistent. So I called up the guy who's putting out the vinyl. The company is called Bespoke. And the guy's name is Michael Dutcher. And as I was talking with him.
What? Michael Dutcher?
You know him?
Yeah. He kind of managed me briefly.
No shit.
Yeah. He was managing this woman that was on Seinfeld, like George's mom on Seinfeld. I think that he was. No, no. Nope. That's wrong. I was referred to him, Michael, by that guy. Anyway, just sort of LA stuff. But look, he was trying to manage me at a time when I was completely unmanageable and totally. But anyway, we hooked up and he drove me to one of my most like embarrassing, like where I was just like, oh, I was literally like, why am I even a musician? What is the point? You know, he drove me to this meeting somewhere in fucking Burbank. George Draculius was there. It was like all these people. And I sat there and played, sweating my fucking ass off, playing like one of my songs to them and just going like, what am I fucking doing? No one's going to give a shit. This doesn't matter. And I did it. And it was humiliating, but Michael drove me there and drove me back. And we talked, but Michael, he was briefly a believer before I convinced him that I wasn't worth believing in.
Is this circa 2000?
Yeah. 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bizarre coincidence.
He's like our age kind of guy.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's Michael. Okay, ask him. I mean, hopefully it's
the same guy. As soon as you sent your thing, I wrote to him and I was like, you know, I just got Lou's piece and he hearted it. That's interesting that he didn't say anything.
Yeah, yeah, when I was just like totally down and out and out, I was surviving, but... Yeah, pre-Dino reunion, I was like looking, I was like trying to make anything stick.
Around emo?
Yeah.
I like Caterpillar Girl. Is that, I like that stuff. I do. There's some great stuff.
Yeah, it's a good record.
It is a good record. I mean, I like that better than the later Sebado stuff.
Not for sure. The later Sebado stuff's harder. That's harder because it's not banned.
I think one of the last Sebado songs that, I mean, every time I heard it, it brought me to such a place, man. Was Dragon. I love that song on Bake Sale.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, dragons to be.
Yeah.
Especially that
Yeah.
So powerful.
Awesome.
Yeah, so anyway, May 3rd, the digital version will be out, and then the Metal Machine Muzak episode is going to be out the same day.
Cool.
And then the vinyl, I'm guessing June or July.
Nice. Awesome. That's great. That's when the Bulk Implosion record's coming out.
When is it coming out?
July something. I don't know.
Okay. Awesome. This is Sleepless in Seattle. Thank you so much. You know, for anyone out there who doesn't know, we've been, you know, pen palish. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did our zombies thing and the interview on a black screen, but it's really nice to be face to face with you.
Yeah.
I love you, Lou.
Thanks, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
dude.
Appreciate it.
All right, that about does it. Stay tuned, because this Monday brings Juan's Corey Hansen and his examination of his relationship with the awe-inspiring Metal Machine Music. A heartfelt discography thanks goes out to my beautiful son, Mason, the incomparable Lou Barlow, Michael Dutcher, Rudy Fishman, Becky Boyd, my incredibly loyal fans, and especially the entire Patreon community, the Soldiers of Sound. I love every last one of you, and this show would not exist without you, my friends. Speaking of friends, it's high time for some new ones. They're in our Facebook group, Discography Soldiers of Sound. That's the best way to find out what's coming up on the show, but there's a hell of a lot more. You get recaps of the day in music history, the ability to pitch questions to guests, polls that put you in the driver's seat on guest and band decisions, and access to a thriving creative hub if you're looking for a collaborator. So make sure you don't miss out. You can find the link to the Discography Soldiers of Sound Facebook page right there in the show notes. And if you don't mess with the Zuck, no sweat. Just email me at info@discography.com and I'll keep you in the loop. So now that it's done and you want more, another way to dive even deeper into the four visionaries featured on the upcoming Metal Machine Muzak tribute album is to leap headfirst into Lou Barlow Rates the Zombies. That's episodes 59 and 60. Unquestionably the greatest Lou Barlow interview of all time. That's episode 62. Juan's Corey Hansen rating his band's entire discography plus his solo work. That's episodes 120 and 121. And don't miss his Patreon companion episodes. W. Cullen Hart rating the Olivia Tremor Control and the Circulatory System. That's episodes 131, 132, and 133. With substantially elongated edits in our Patreon for the Lieutenant and Major tiers, and the epic 16-hour Mark Robinson interview, which is episodes 128, 130, 135, and 136, with massively elongated companion edits on our Lieutenant and Major tiers and our Patreon as well. And of course, be sure to mark your calendars, because we're coming at you raging full on with Metal Machine Music Week. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss a single second of it. And so, from now till then, don't let our youth go to waste, lads and ladies. It's Discography.
Osiris.